Joining us, the Hall of Fame voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, formerly the voice of the Hartford Whalers. That song must bring back some good memories, Chuck Hayden.
Oh, it absolutely does, Derek. Hey, thanks for having me on this afternoon. I have not heard that song in at least, maybe a couple of months, because believe it or not, there was a surprise to people at the PNC Arena when the Hurricanes were winning games in January. They would actually play that song in the last commercial break of the third period if they had a very safe lead. And it kind of startled a lot of people in Raleigh. But that was, I guess it's a tapping to the roots and a nice move. So, yeah, there were a lot of great memories with that. Even though Doc Emmerich, our preeminent broadcaster here in the United States for NBC, said he absolutely hated that song when he was a member of the Flyers broadcast crew because he had to hear it 11 times one night.
Yeah, you know what? I absolutely love the song. And we actually use it on our broadcast, believe it or not, when the Flames go on a winning streak. Or pull off a miraculous win, then our host Pat Steinberg will play it leading into our post-game call-in show overtime. So it's a song that I quite enjoy. I have a funny story. I think you'll like this one. So Doug Jarvis, of course, the NHL's Iron Man, was a member of the Hartford Whalers. That's actually when he broke the record held by Gary Unger. And Doug Jarvis was the head coach of the Hamilton Bulldogs for a few seasons and wasn't all that tech savvy. So this was in the era of the flip phones, and he was having a problem with his flip phone, so he asked me to help him out. So I helped him out, fixed his problem, and then gave him a little bonus. I decided to make his ringtone the Brass Bonanza. He wasn't very happy about that because he didn't know how to change it.
I don't know why he wouldn't. Well, I think I could probably complete that story for you. The reason he wasn't happy about it was because it was a bittersweet memory for him, because the late Jack Evans, an Albertan by birth, was the coach when his streak ended. And it ended in the second game of the season. I believe it was the 87-88 season when Brett Peterson was acquired from the Vancouver Canucks in a trade, and basically took Jarvis's place on the fourth line to kill penalties, and that's how the streak ended. He was a healthy extra in a game at Boston Garden, Derek, one night. So I guess I don't blame Doug for not liking the song, because that was a memory that kind of ended his Ironman streak.
Yeah, it took me about a week before I finally agreed to change his ringtone back to just a regular ring, but we all got quite a kick out of it. Chuck, really appreciate you joining us on this Monday afternoon. Wanted to bring you on for a number of reasons, and we'll talk about some of the former Carolina Hurricanes that are now members of the Calgary Flames in a minute, but I love to hear about the road to the National Hockey League for other broadcasters and about their time in the NHL. So if we could, take us back to before you became the voice of the old Hartford Whalers. How did you get into broadcasting?
Well, I got into it from going to school at the University of Michigan, and I was a pre-med student and a math major, but I spent a lot of time at the student station, and by my sophomore year, I got a commercial job in Ann Arbor. And, of course, back then, hockey wasn't as big at the University of Michigan as it is now, and certainly with Red Berenson and his great career building the program back up again as he did. That was pre-Red Berenson days, and our station did not do hockey. So I did basketball and football, and I approached the station manager, and lo and behold, we sold it and started doing Michigan hockey in the 72-73 season. So basically, to make a long story short, I spent 9 years in Big Ten sports at the University of Michigan and the University of Wisconsin. For people in Calgary, they probably still love the beloved late, great Bob Johnson. I had a chance to work with him at Wisconsin for 4 years from 75 to 79, and then the phone call came from Hartford. It was very strange. I did an NCAA playoff game in Providence, Rhode Island between the Badgers and Boston University, and it was the Boston University team that featured guys like Dave Silk and Jim Craig and people that would go on and to play on that 80 Olympic team for the United States that, of course, upset the Soviets. And a gentleman was sitting next to me from the Whaler organization, and they called me that summer and asked me to come to the Hartford Whalers, and I was honored to do so. I was 27 years of age at the time, and picked up my family and moved to New England. And that was, of course, 39 years ago. So it's been a treat to be. And, of course, we've had some ups and downs, obviously, with the move to Raleigh in 1997. And it's hard to believe that the team's been in North Carolina for now 21 years.
What do you remember most about your time in Hartford and the Whalers' time in Hartford?
Well, meeting some of the greats of the game. I mean, the Hartford Whalers, Derek, in that first season, when they joined with the three other WHA teams, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Quebec, in 79-80, I mean, it was an all-star team, basically, with Gordie Howe and Dave Keon, two tremendous gentlemen that became lifelong friends of mine. And, of course, the late Gordie Howe, I was very, very close to. Still am very close to Dave Keon, who's living down in Florida now. So it was kind of a magical year because a lot like Las Vegas' franchise this year, we weren't really a true expansion team in that there was not an expansion draft. The WHA teams were allowed to keep a number of their players with deals that were made with the NHL teams to keep those players and give up some draft picks if those players had been claimed or were drafted by the NHL teams previous to the teams coming into the league. Really, they had a veteran team, and they made the playoffs that year. And even though it was a short series, back then the first round was a best of five, and the Whalers lost in three straight to the Montreal Canadiens, who had, of course, won the Stanley Cup the year earlier. But it was good to make the playoffs. It kind of gave Whaler fans a lot of hope for the future, and unfortunately they didn't make the playoffs again until Emil Francis took over as general manager 85-86 season, so there was a bit of a drought there. And but the memories for me were meeting people like Dave Keon, Gordie Howe, and of course, the early days when your eyes are wide open, I'm sure it's the same for you, Derek, when you started doing Flames games, you had to pinch yourself because you had the greatest job in the world, and I certainly felt that way in Hartford.
No doubt about it. How did you feel about the move? Were you excited to go to Raleigh, or did you wonder whether or not hockey would work in a non-traditional hockey market? What was going through your mind when you found out the team was going to be moving?
Well, it was interesting because there were two or three places, two other places that were rumored to be the destination prior to Raleigh, and I never dreamed that the organization would move to Raleigh. I mean, that was on the back burner, I thought. Columbus was the number one choice of Peter Karmanos, who owned the team at the time, because he had roots to Central Ohio. His wife had been from Delaware County, which is the county just north of Columbus. And, of course, he's from Detroit, so that seemed to be the natural place. But as we all know, as history's shown us, the NHL wanted the expansion money, and Columbus was reserved for an expansion team. Raleigh was the third. Minnesota, by the way, was the other place that we were rumored to be moving, but neither happened. And so I guess when you ask me about my feeling of Raleigh, I've got to be very honest with you. I was not ecstatic about it at all. I thought, what the heck are we doing here, especially with no arena done, an arena committed for, but not finished in time for the 97-98 season. So 2 years had to be played in Greensboro, which is about an hour and a half west of Raleigh. So that made it even more difficult to market the team, to get crowds. So basically, I have to be very honest with you, Derek, it was a nightmare. And unfortunately, it played out that way with attendance, but once the team moved to Raleigh, got some success, went to the finals in 02, things started turning around.
And that nightmare turned into a dream back in 2006 when you said the 9,393 days of frustration, and on the 9,394th day of NHL existence, the Carolina Hurricanes, the Whaler organization till 97, have won the Stanley Cup. What was that experience like, Chuck?
Well, you know, you put it, I remember saying those words, and I appreciate you echoing them to your audience because I felt an affinity for the Whaler fans. I think they were as much a part of it as Hurricane fans, and the feeling was tremendous. I felt so good for people like Brett Hedekin, for Glenn Wesley, for Rod Brind'Amour, players who had gone to the finals with other teams and never won. You know, Hedekin with the Canucks, as you'll remember, in 94. Wesley a couple of times with the Boston Bruins and never won. The Edmonton Oilers beat them. And, of course, Rod Brind'Amour, who lost to Detroit in the mid-90s when he was a Philadelphia Flyer. So those are the guys I really felt good for. And I felt good for the fans because I think they deserved to see that collection of players, much like the team in 89 that won the Stanley Cup with the Flames. They had just tremendous chemistry, probably as that Flames team did. And they weren't going to be... They weren't going to be denied. I mean, they just had a bunch of veteran guys and young guys. I mean, Eric Staal was a rookie. Cam Ward was a rookie to supplement some of the veteran leadership that the Hurricanes had. And it all worked out, and it was just a tremendous experience that I still look back on. And I guess the only thing I can't believe is that was now 12 years ago. It's hard to believe.
It sure is. Chuck Caton joining us down the guest hotline for Grey Eagle Resort and Casino. I'm going to put you on the hot seat, Chuck. During all your seasons with the Whalers and Hurricanes organization, who's the best player that's played for the team?
Wow. Well, I think that's fairly easy. Ronnie Francis would be the guy that I would say because he transcended both organizations. I mean, he was a very pivotal player until the dark day back in March of 1991 when the Whalers traded him to the Pittsburgh Penguins in a deal that I think basically sealed the fate of hockey in Hartford. And then his return in 98 to the Hurricane organization where he did some good things and, of course, led the Hurricanes to that Stanley Cup appearance in 02 against Detroit. Even though they didn't win it, they went all the way. They surprised a lot of people that year, and Ronnie Francis was at the fulcrum of it. So I'd have to say he is Mr. Whaler Hurricane. And the close second for me is a guy that has spent 18 years in this organization and is now going to be the coach of the team, Rod Brind'Amour. Two very classy individuals.
There's been an ownership change in Carolina, and Tom Dundon now owns the Hurricanes. And that's led to some transition both on and off the ice, hasn't it?
Well, it really has, and I don't know if your listeners have gotten the word, but former Calgary assistant Steve Smith has just resigned as an assistant coach to raise some eyebrows. I don't know if the word's gotten out there yet. I just saw it on my phone just before you called me here, and there have been a lot of changes. It remains to be seen whether they're going to benefit the organization or not, but I think Tom Dundon has come in and made a lot of moves, not the least of which was the firing of Ron Francis, which I know has not sat well with a lot of the fans here in Raleigh, and especially the way it was conducted. So there's going to have to be some repair work done here, and it's going to have to be on the ice. And Rod Brind'Amour is in a particularly ticklish situation here because he's Mr. Hurricane right now, and everybody's rooting for him here, Derek, and it's an uphill battle, and they made a lot of changes on the ice, as you alluded to before, including that trade with Calgary, and also losing Bill Peters to the Flames as coach, that it's going to be interesting to see what happens this fall with the Hurricanes.
Well, Chuck, as you know, winning can fix a lot of things, so if the Hurricanes can win more games next season, I'm sure that'll make the transition for the owner and for his new general manager and head coach and some of the new players a lot easier. I want to ask you about the big trade that took place on day two of the NHL draft, and we'll get to that in a minute, but let's start with Bill Peters, the former head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, now the new bench boss of the Calgary Flames. What can you tell us about Bill Peters?
Bill Peters, in the 4 years that I've known him, is nobody prepares more than he does. I think he has an excellent game plan every night. He is very prepared. I think he communicates very well with his players. I think he just eats, sleeps, and lives hockey, and also has a wonderful personality. I think he will do a good job in Calgary. Again, it's all about the players, and it's all about, putting together the chemistry, like you said, of winning, and that cures everything. But Bill's got a lot of credentials. I know he was as frustrated as anybody with the situation here, not being able to make the playoffs in 4 years. But sometimes that's not always the coach. There's other circumstances that surround a team and why they don't win. Trying to make cultural changes, I think, is the big thing right now. As you know, with a lot of teams that don't win, they try to change that culture somehow, and I think Bill Peters will be a part of that in Calgary. I have nothing but great things to say about him. He's a good friend, and I think a very, very capable hockey coach.
There's no guarantee that the Flames will play the same system that the Hurricanes did. I think it's safe to say Bill Peters probably has a few more tools in his toolbox in Calgary than he did in Carolina. But what style of hockey did the Hurricanes play? And it, was that one of the reasons why they were able to stay competitive most nights?
Well, I think so. I think he had a very solid mindset. I wouldn't say he was as aggressive as, a Peter Laviolette was in his philosophy here in Raleigh. I mean, Peter was all go, go, go offensively and pressure everywhere. But I think that the biggest thing with the Hurricanes were they were very sound defensively. If you look at some of the statistics of shots on goal against and defensive acumen, the Hurricanes always seem to rank in the top two or three that way, and they would limit good quality scoring opportunities. Now, I'm an old schooler. I mean, I don't go a lot for analytics, but when you look and do the eye test, the Hurricanes were a very sound defensive team, and I think that the situation in Calgary, I think, will benefit Bill Peters more on an offensive angle because the Hurricanes do not have a Sean Monahan, for example. They don't have a Johnny Gaudreau, so just to name two. And I think people are going to be surprised with how good Elias Lindholm can be offensively as he plays center ice instead of the wing. I'm not sure what Bill Peters is going to do in that situation. I think he'd like to see him out at center ice to show what he can do because he can be a 25 to 30 goal scorer maximum as well. So, you know, it's a whole different team. But I think he's a very versatile coach that is going to be looking for good offense. I know he's excited about coaching in Calgary. So I think good things will happen for the Flames.
Well, the Hurricanes might not have Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, but they now have Michael Ferland and Dougie Hamilton, and potentially down the road, Adam Fox as well. Those three guys sent from Calgary to Carolina in exchange for Noah Hanifin and Elias Lindholm. What did you make of the deal when you heard about it?
Well, I was very interested because I was very impressed with Ferland and the kind of year he had. You probably could tell me more about him. I don't know as much about Dougie Hamilton. I know he's a solid offensive performer from the blue line, and I had my head scratching for a little bit because it seems like Hamilton is going to come into the role in Carolina that Justin Falk was providing, and of course there's a lot of rumors about Falk being traded. So there's going to be quite a crowd at the blue line if there are no more deals between now and the start of the season for the Hurricanes. But I thought it was probably a pretty good deal for both teams. I do know what I think anytime you trade two fifth picks overall in the first round, like Lindholm and Hanifin, it raises a few eyebrows here, especially in the case of Hanifin, who was only in his third season and I think was improving from an offensive standpoint and got better and better defensively as well. So, it's going to be, I think the acid test will be the games. And I think that anytime you make a cross conference move, you probably don't follow it as much as you would, within the conference with the number of games played. So I'll be watching from afar how Hanifin and Lindholm do, and hoping for the best, obviously, for the Hurricanes with Ferland and Hamilton.
The Hall of Fame voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, Chuck Caton, joining us down the guest hotline for Grey Eagle Resort and Casino, Calgary's ultimate entertainment destination at the doorstep of the Rocky Mountains, offering a four-star resort hotel, live gaming action, and a world-class event center. So the Flames in that deal get to two former fifth overall picks, as you mentioned, in a 21-year-old defenseman, Noah Hanifin, and 23-year-old forward, Elias Lindholm. We'll start with Hanifin, Chuck. Can you give us a bit of background on him and why the Hurricanes were willing to let go of that former fifth overall pick just a couple of years into his career?
Well, I think that he had a lot of pressure put on him right off the bat. I mean, he was signed, he was inserted in the lineup as an 18-year-old, and as everybody knows in the NHL, Derek, it's awful tough for a defenseman to come in at that age. So I think he had a lot on his plate. A lot of people felt that he was going to have to be a savior, both on an offensive end. They knew he had a lot of offensive upside, but he had some, there are a lot of areas that he needed to get better at defensively, as young defensemen have to learn. And I think he slowly did learn. I thought he got better and better offensively in the progressive 3 years that he played here in Carolina. So I think the sky's the limit for a guy like that. I think that he still needs to work on some of his defensive play. He's a kid with size, and I think he needs to use it a little bit more. But he's an excellent skater and an excellent passer, and I think Flames fans are going to enjoy watching him play. And as far as Elias Lindholm is concerned, I mean, he's the veteran of the two, I guess, being a couple of years older, and he's a guy that I think still has more to give. I mean, I think, as I say, I think he can be a solid, at least a 25-goal scorer in the National Hockey League and maybe a 55- or 60-point guy in the league, especially in the Western Conference. I think he can open it up a little bit more. You know, he's a smart player, and I think he's a player that, again, has a lot of skill, can be a little more physical too. He's got good size, and again, is a guy that I don't know if he's tapped his full potential yet, and I think the Flames are going to see it in the future.
Is Lindholm a guy that Peters used in all situations?
Yeah, he trusted him. He's a very good faceoff man, and also a guy that can kill penalties. He didn't do it as much, but very good in the faceoff circle. And very aware defensively. He's a good two-way player. So, you know, I think that he will do a good job.
Sounds a little bit like the guy the Flames signed formerly of the Hurricanes in NHL free agency as well. The name Derek Ryan isn't one I had heard prior to the last couple of years. And, of course, he was a bit of a late bloomer. I think that's safe to say, Chuck. And then comes over to North America and rolls the dice on himself and starts in the American Hockey League, works his way up to the National Hockey League. What can you tell us about the newest member of the Flames, Derek Ryan?
Well, there aren't too many like him. He's a great character guy, Derek, and he's kind of a pet project and a pet player for Bill Peters. I was not surprised whatsoever that if there was an opportunity, if the Hurricanes were not going to re-sign Derek, that he would go to the Flames and follow Bill, because Bill was his junior coach in Spokane. I don't know of too many players that have played a full junior career and then have gone up to play Canadian college hockey, as Derek did as well, the University of Alberta. So bottom line is he wanted to become a pharmacist, he told me. He's a very cerebral young kid. And when you say late bloomer, I think it's an understatement, because he never came into the league until the age of 29. So, and he has spent the last couple of seasons here in Carolina, and he's done a good job. He's a great character guy. He'll go through the wall for you. And despite his lack of size, he's a good enough skater and a tenacious enough player that any team would want a guy like that in a good fourth line role. So I think Derek Ryan, again, especially playing with Bill Peters, a coach he's had ever since his junior days, he will flourish there. I mean, he's not going to be a superstar by any stretch of imagination, but he will be a very reliable player for the Flames.
Chatting with Chuck Caton, the voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, formerly the voice of the Hartford Whalers. Since day one, he has been the voice of that franchise and inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame as a broadcaster back in 2004. And you know, for us young guys or younger guys, Chuck, it's something we obviously aspire to. But how did you feel when you got that call and found out you would be in the Hockey Hall of Fame?
Well, I always called it being railroaded in my 25th season by Doc Emrick. I mean, Mike Emrick was the one who the Broadcasters Association has a committee of emeritus members that have been in the Hall of Fame. And, of course, your predecessor is one of our selectors, Peter Marr, on the committee. And so the bottom line was, they said, hey, and it was the lockout year, if you recall, the 04-05 season. There was no hockey. So all of a sudden, I was told that I was dismissed from the meeting that we always hold in April to name the Foster Hewitt Memorial nominee. And I said, what do you mean I'm dismissed? And Mike Emrick said, well, you're not going to be in this year's meeting. And I just kind of raised my eyebrows, and then I found out later what he meant by that, and that is they wanted to bestow me with the honor. And I was certainly humbled and flattered. And for me, as a kid growing up in Detroit, I always wanted to be a hockey broadcaster. That was my favorite sport. Despite doing other sports like football and basketball on the you know, the college level, hockey was always my favorite sport. So it was a dream come true. And to see my kids there, I have three boys, my wife, my mother at the time, who was alive to see it, coming up from Detroit, and other family members and friends, it was terrific. And I looked out into the audience, and I saw Gordie Howe sitting there at the luncheon.
Wow.
And I didn't know he was going to be coming, and even he came that day to be part of the festivities, and it always meant a lot to me, including our former owner, Peter Karmanos, and, of course, former general manager Jim Rutherford, who also attended.
Well, some of our listeners might not know, but Hurricanes fans clearly do, is that you're like the Vin Scully of the National Hockey League because you call most games by yourself. I know you could have a color commentator if you wanted to, but why do you enjoy calling games by yourself, Chuck?
Well, I enjoy it because, you know, basically from an economic standpoint, they have never, well, I mean, in Hartford we had a color person, but ever since we moved here to North Carolina, they've said, hey, work by yourself and we'll pay you a little bit more for it, which is always good.
I love your honesty.
But no, but yeah, seriously, I've enjoyed it. I think the challenge of it for me has always been to give people a little bit more than the play-by-play, maybe do a little bit of history. I do go back at the age of 66 to the six-team NHL. When I've seen players play, I can make allusions to the past and to now a second generation of players because I've seen the fathers play. You know, in like Matthew Tkachuk's case, I saw the whole career of his father. I think that helps. You can do anecdotal stories. You can educate fans. You can entertain them. And you have that ability. And let's face it, Derek, you know as well as I do, when you work with Peter, it's hard for a color man to come into the play. There's not a lot of stoppages. So that's become a little easier as time's gone on, too, for one broadcaster.
Yeah, I must admit, going from the American Hockey League, where I called probably about 50% of the games on my own, to the National Hockey League, where I've got a host to work with and a color commentator to work with, and I've got to let them have their airtime. That has been, at times, a bit of a challenge for me to just shut up. So I certainly understand where you're coming from. A couple more for you before I let you go, Chuck. Looking back at the 2017-2018 season, the Vegas Golden Knights story was an incredible one. Nobody saw them coming, and I'm not sure all that many people saw the Washington Capitals coming because on paper, it didn't look like they had quite as good a team as they had the previous two seasons when they won the President's Trophy. Your thoughts on the 2017-2018 season and specifically on the two teams that got to the Stanley Cup Final?
Well, obviously, Derek, it was a season of surprises. I mean, that was the biggest surprise, seeing the way Vegas was able to take the league by storm. I knew a lot about Gerard Gallant, having seen him coach in the Eastern Conference with various teams. I mean, he was with Columbus at one time, Montreal as an assistant, and obviously his days with the Florida Panthers, where he was unceremoniously fired in Raleigh early two seasons ago. So and had to take a taxi cab back to the hotel while the team went on to Chicago on a road trip. So I knew that Gallant was going to be the right guy for George McPhee, and but I didn't know what kind of chemistry they would have. But you know Derek Engelin, and I think it started with him, and then, of course, Marc-Andre Fleury, a very credible goalie, and they went from there, and they had that us-against-the-world attitude, especially after the tragedy that befell Las Vegas right before the season started. It kind of bonded them, and it was a miracle year. As far as the Washington Capitals are concerned, my good friend John Walton, their fine radio broadcaster, set me up in the preseason and said, you know what, we're going to have a very tough year this year. I think you guys are going to make the playoffs, and we're not in the Metropolitan Division. And that was the kiss of death because he couldn't have been more wrong. Even though Washington got off to a tough start, they got better and better as the season went on, and I thought Barry Trotz did a magnificent job with that team. They got their goaltending straightened out as the season went along. And Alexander Ovechkin led the way, and he had fire in his eyes in the playoffs, and he would not be denied. And he led that team, and they just had a terrific year. They got better and better as the season went on, Derek. And obviously they didn't have the best start in the world, but they ended up being the best team in the Eastern Conference in the NHL at the end. So it was a surprising season, and one that I don't think a lot of people will forget. And, you know, I have to be very honest. I'm a little bit biased, but I was happy for a Metropolitan Division team to win the Stanley Cup again, as they did the previous couple of years with Pittsburgh.
Well, I had bragging rights with John Walton because my Hamilton Bulldogs upset his Hershey Bears in five games in the 2007 Calder Cup Final. But Don't have many more, so we'll see if the Calgary Flames can help me get them back. Chuck, this has been an absolute pleasure. Last one for you before I let you go. Lots of changes in Carolina. What has to happen in 2018, 2019 for the Hurricanes to take that next step and maybe get to the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Well, I think they have to come back in with a cultural change. They have to get good goaltending, and that's the biggest problem right now. Scott Darling did not have a good year. Cam Ward has moved on to Chicago now, and so you have Peter Mrazek coming in from Philadelphia as a free agent. It all starts there. So, I can't go any further. The Hurricanes have a very solid defense, but defense doesn't score goals, and the two things that they need to have happen are the two basics of hockey. You've got to put the puck in the net, and you got to keep the puck out of the net. And those are the two major questions that the Hurricanes will have, Derek. And until that's answered, I really hope they are answered in the affirmative, because if they are, the Hurricanes will make a run at a playoff spot. If they are not, this could be a disastrous season. I hate to say it, but I'm only telling you the truth, because Scott Darling did not have a great year last year. He's been given a four-year mandate and needs to be the number one goaltender that everybody thought he would be when he signed a year ago as a free agent. So, hey, it's hockey 101. Score goals, keep them out of the net, and if the Hurricanes can do that, they'll be fine.
Well, two guys who will help the Canes score some goals next season, Dougie Hamilton and Michael Ferland. And I can tell you this, Chuck, when Ferland is on his game, he looks like a guy who can be an elite power forward in this league. I think Hamilton is certainly one of the best offensive defensemen in the NHL. And, he's played in two pretty tough markets, Boston and Calgary. I really think that Raleigh could be the perfect place for him. Not as bright a spotlight on him there. And two guys I think that the Hurricanes and their fans will absolutely love. I got to tell you, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on this Monday. And congratulations on your great Hall of Fame career, which just seems to get better with age. And I look forward to seeing you next season.
Well, I hope so, Derek. Me too. You're one of the bright young broadcasters in the league, and I hope you're right about Ferland and Hamilton, because Hurricane fans are certainly looking to see what they can do. And I as you said, Ferland's a guy that's very, very impressive, and Hamilton's got a lot of upside potential too, and has proved it offensively. So I think Hurricane fans are looking forward to seeing both those players and looking forward to the season. So we'll see you along the line, and thanks for having me on today.
Well, thanks again, Chuck, and we'll see you next season. Have a good one.
You got it. Thank you, Derek.
Chuck Caton, the Hall of Fame voice of the Carolina Hurricanes, joining us down the guest hotline for Grey Eagle Resort and Casino.